Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Blue Mountain Village Voices.
Welcome to our co-host today, Jim Torrance. Jim is the chair of the Blue Mountain Ratepayers Association. And joining us for a great discussion today is Sean Everett, CAO of the Town of Blue Mountains. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
I always like to start by asking our interviewees to tell us a little bit about yourselves and your history with the Town of Blue Mountains. So, Jim, why don't we start with you?
Like a lot of folks, I've moved up here from the GTA about 6 years ago. Haven't regretted a minute that decision, and decided that getting involved with my new community was something I wanted to pursue. And became aware of the ratepayers and joined in about 5 years ago. And I've been president for a few years now.
Excellent. And quickly, the Ratepayers Association, tell us a little bit about it. What does it do?
Sure. Our role basically is to advocate with town staff and town council on behalf of our members. We have a mailing list of about 450 people. And I would say that primarily our focuses are on finance, planning, and infrastructure is sort of the primary buckets, with growing interest in county related issues.
For sure. Yeah, you've done some great deputations at the county and municipal level, and you bring really great research with lots of your homework done. So I always enjoy when we get to read your position papers and hear you in action. Sean, I know for a fact that you are probably one of a few people in our community who have a deep, deep local roots, but tell us a little bit about yourself and your connection to the town.
Thank you, Andrew. I've been here at the town since 1993, so I'm not a local, but I have been here for almost 30 years.
I think that's local territory now.
Yeah, hopefully. So yeah, I came here just as the new Beaver Valley Arena was being constructed, and first came here as the manager of the arena. And then just over the years, I've been extremely fortunate to be able to be surrounded by really great people at the town, and went from manager of the facility to director of recreation, then through director of community services, and then most recently between acting CAO, interim CAO, and now full-time CAO for the last almost 4 years.
Yeah, you've done a great job. I think your career path has followed a lot of folks here in the community, where they have deep knowledge of the operations over time, working in a lot of different aspects of businesses, and then you end up in the leadership position. We've seen that in the resort communities and many others. So it's a great career path, isn't it?
I would say that the background in the community services has allowed me to really understand the urban area, rural area, and I would also say just building the relationships. Having those people that you can reach out to, get a good understanding, and at the end of the day, just, you know, be a face that people recognize and be able to come forward with good ideas. And it's one of the nicest places you could ever think of living. Coming from Southampton, it's amazing how Southampton and Town of Blue Mountains, I guess Southampton now Saugeen Shores, they're very, very similar. Being able to live with the natural amenities that we have, it's awesome. So I live here, I've been here for 30 years, live in town, and wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, we're all very lucky, aren't we?
Yes.
All right, let's jump right into it. Thank you both for joining us today. So I'm going to kick us off, and then I'm going to pass it over to Jim. But first and foremost, Sean, with a new council recently elected here in the Town of the Blue Mountains, you know, I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about what are some of the things that the staff does to prepare and develop new relationships and protocols with a newly elected council. What is that like on the inside?
So it's pretty interesting. We're really excited with the group that we have. The last term of council was, where they're a very innovative and creative group. And the last term of council was, if you recall, it's 7 members were all new. So this time we've got 4 members that are new, and one of those members is returning from previous terms of council. So from the internal side, there's a lot of work. We try to provide as much orientation as we can without overwhelming council. So last week we were actually at Gray County doing 2 days of orientation with all of our council. The nice thing is it was a great opportunity for our council members to understand and meet the other councillors from the other municipalities. So we've got over the next 2.5 months, quite a few orientation sessions with our council and a lot of good work, but really just getting them to a point where, you know, they're comfortable with process and procedures and a good understanding of not only the work that we've done in previous councils, but sort of looking at the priorities with the next 4 years. One thing that I really was impressed with this term of council was Mayor Matrosoff and myself had the opportunity to meet with council members one-on-one and really got a good understanding of where priorities were and just a good chance to sort of start that relationship. So something that hadn't been done in the past, which I saw huge benefits in creating that first piece of our relationship moving forward.
Absolutely. And it's always a great forum to sort of learn a little bit about each counselor, what some of the priorities that they see, and then builds that teamwork too, doesn't it?
Yeah. And also really, really allowed us to get a good understanding of what they heard through the election and what their priorities were or are. And so moving forward, we can get some good alignment on priorities.
For sure. A lot of industries, if you will, I often think of a council as like a corporation. It is. You do regular member surveys or customer surveys, you get a bit of information. But when you're doing an election, I mean, you're really out there. You're hearing from so many people door to door. And so it's a great opportunity to harness all that information that everyone's collected, and doing it right away is a good idea because you retain it all and you can sort of put it to action. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very fresh on their minds.
Yeah. You know, the benefit of having a fresh set of eyes, I think, is always positive. And in that regard, we know that fully half of the positions on the county council are new to their chairs with this term as well. And acknowledging that there were some challenges, I think, in the past with county relationship in our town, what are your thoughts on the opportunities that we may have with regard to the county relationship and working effectively with the county?
Yeah, I think there's great opportunity. And, you know, I think over the last number of years, there's always been a strong relationship at a staff level with the county, which, you know, we've worked really hard at maintaining. With the new members of county council, I just think there's a really good opportunity there to be able to build relationships and really be able to, you know, help identify we are different. We are a bit unique in Gray County, but at the end of the day, we want to be part of the process and really want everybody to be able to identify, you know, we are unique, but every single one of those municipalities are a little bit different and respect that. And at the end of the day, the win will be if we can get the best deal and the most out of the county and others can do the same. I think at the end of the day, it's good for everybody.
Are there a couple of items at that county level where you see there's a lot of alignment across all of those communities? Like, are there a couple of points that jump out to go, yeah, we're all pretty aligned on the following?
Well, I think it's one of the big ones right off the bat was Bill 23. And that's, you know, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about Bill 23, but, you know, we were very quick to act and had a lot of support from the county where we were able to get the two MPPs, Mr. Byers and Mr. Saunderson, into a meeting with the county and the town early on in that. So we're very, very in a very collaborative mode with Bill 23. I think the other piece is just transportation. Mm. You know, having a good collaborative approach with transportation, we've made great strides, and a lot of it is with the great work that Jim team is doing behind the scenes where, you know, let's just do a very comprehensive transportation review to make sure that, let's say, Gray Road 19, what's it going to be like in the next 10 years? And there's a couple roundabouts that they're planning. We just want to make sure that when we're doing it, you know, it makes sense. And so, for instance, something like Blue Mountain Resorts, you know, we want to make sure that if there are a couple of roundabouts and some significant work, we're looking at it. Let's plan it so we limit the duration of the disturbance. And rather than, you know, do this over 3 or 4 years, if there's a way that we can limit that and get it done in a shorter amount of time, it's probably better for all of us. And we can't do that without having that good relationship with the county.
John, one of the points that we've pressed with the county is the idea that the growth that we're experiencing as a town, which is higher than the rest of the county, benefits the county pretty broadly, but that we need support, we need investment to ensure that that growth, in fact, is supportable. Do you get the sense that that message is registering to some extent at County Council?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the reality is, again, people are understanding. I know at the staff level, there's a good understanding that projects are probably more expensive to get done in the Blue Mountains as well. Just when you take a look at, I'm going to say Grey Road 19 and a potential four laning. There's not a lot of other municipalities within Grey County, for the exception of maybe Owen Sound, that are looking at, you know, what was once called a county road being a four lane, let alone, you know, two or three additional roundabouts. So there's a good understanding of that. The other reality is, you know, to do these work, the cost of land is significantly more in the town of Blue Mountains as well. So the county, I can't say enough good things about working with the county, because I think over the last 3 or 4 years, we've got a very, very good relationship. We have a better understanding now of what is being proposed. And, you know, I think of the Grey Road 19 and 21 roundabout. I think between County Simcoe, County Grey, Town of Collingwood, and the Blue Mountains, I think we all have a very good understanding of, you know, what that process looks like. And at the end of the day, let's make sure it functions well. And it's not an afterthought.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard sometimes when you're in that zone where you're debating, is this the right solution? Who should be paying? And then, you know, eventually it's needed and you spend, I think, sometimes more time up front. And what you're saying is the details of it matter and need that focus. How it's going to be designed, how it's going to be functioning, right? You got to get there.
Yeah. It has to be done in a very effective, in my mind, just has to be done in a more timely fashion. We're talking, you know, we probably started talking about the roundabout at Mountain Road and 19 and 21, probably in 2000, I'm going to say 12, 13.
Yeah. It's funny because I am hearing a lot of some similar feedback in the sort of Blue Mountain Village community. Certainly a desire to see things that are development related happen quicker, or to see changes implemented quicker. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we all, you know, you're always balancing those expectations with the realities of, you know, what's possible and when. But I think that's a trend we're seeing across the board, isn't it? People wanting to see faster action. From a municipal perspective, what are the real challenges in making that happen?
So I think one of the challenges that I've seen, and I've seen it over the last probably 15 to 20 years, a lot of the developments that we have on the books, many people think they're new developments, but they're not. They've been on the books 15, 20 years. And, you know, over the course of time, there'll be modifications and revisions, and you never really notice them until you see the excavators and the land being cleared. So selfishly, from the municipality's perspective, I think that's where we're, full disclosure, a little bit reactive. And we spend a lot of time and effort on our new website, where we've developed these new development pages. So every development in the Blue Mountains has a project page that gives you the history.
They're great, actually. I've spent some time through them. They are a great resource.
I think they provide good information, and it really puts it in context that, you know, these things aren't new. And over the course of time, they may have different owners. There may be different concepts, but the goal was to make sure they were available to the public, where if all of a sudden you saw a development taking place, gives you a bit of an opportunity to go and say, okay, so what's this going to be? We still have lots of work to do on that, but it was a first great step where, you know, at the end of the day, it's something that we can point residents to and say, if you want some high level information, go to those pages.
Yeah. So, Jim, what do you think? I mean, you're the voice of the residential community and the ratepayers, if you will. What's your sense of the drive to see things quicker, and what could help get things moving a little more efficiently?
The idea of a sense of urgency, I think, certainly has taken root here. And it probably relates to, we're seeing the growth, which we know is going to continue. And we also know that infrastructure is a challenge in terms of being able to get it created to support that growth.
Yeah.
So I think the feeling is, with both the amount of work that's got to be done for infrastructure and inflationary pressure, the sense is, yeah, we want to see decisions made faster. You know, I hate to come back to the parking lot example in Thornbury, but it did feel as though that decision and the whole process took a long time to come to fruition. I think people are looking for, I think, maybe greater sense of urgency in making decisions more quickly, mm-hmm. as a way to try to move forward in areas that we need to make progress.
Yeah, I think that's probably something any organization or group or municipality is trying to figure out. How can we improve decision-making processes so that we are mitigating risk and advancing forward. And yeah, it's tough. My theory is that over the last few years, especially as we all react to COVID-19 and the pandemic and the impacts, I think there is a greater urgency around some of the impatience, but also an imperative for us to switch our models too, right? It's kind of, they're both happening at the same time.
Yeah, and I would just add too that there's so much work going on across the town. It's impossible for people to be able to stay on top of everything, but we're encouraging council and staff to focus on what are the top 5 or 6 priorities that we know are critical to the town's future, and just keep the town residents informed in terms of progress that we're making, hitting timelines, hitting budget numbers, just because I think that allows us to better understand the priorities that John had been mentioning, you know, are being clarified with the new council.
Yeah.
And can give residents a sense of, you know, how we're moving forward in those areas.
Right.
So critical.
Well, and I think that's a great segue, Jim, into some of the most recent survey, the town satisfaction survey that was recently deployed. And we've got a few questions. I think we're going to dive into some of that prioritization and a few other things. So let me kick it off. There was a really great stat from the satisfaction survey, which showed that just a little more than 90% of those who took the survey provided a high satisfaction rating in terms of living in the town. So very satisfied with their experience being a resident. What do you think, Sean, drives that high score?
I think it's just a great place to live. And I think the services that we provide, we have a good level of what I would call core services. I think over the last number of years, we've sort of maybe jumped into other areas that may not be core services, but have answered the call to residents' requests. And what's not to like? Like you're on the water and you've got the mountain. You've got lots of trails and open space. So I think generally people are satisfied. I think one of the things that, you know, the survey told us was as good of a result it was, we still only had about 300, just over 350 take the first part of the survey, which was more about the citizen satisfaction. And then that reduced down to about 150 for the second, which was more infrastructure related. We do think that people maybe got surveyed out because we've done a number of them. So we're learning from that. But I think the other thing that we've done a pretty good job of is the way we do our surveys, give the people the opportunity to let us know what part of the town they're actually living. And this one in particular, there was a strong percentage of the respondents came from the Thornbury area. So that's something that we're always being mindful of. We find it very good information when we're looking at the results, because it really allows us to sort of get an idea of maybe the comments were skewed a bit in certain areas. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, fire services came out loud and clear, and that people were very satisfied with that. And we know going forward with the fire services, we've got some challenges with being able to keep those numbers from our volunteers up. But overall, yeah, we're really satisfied. We're happy with the results, and trying to have a real keen focus on those areas that need improvement of working with council to get a good plan of how we do better.
Yeah. I saw those splits in the survey, and I think if you combine the sort of Blue Mountain Village and Craigleith respondents, it was about 30% of the respondents came from that sort of general area, yeah, east end of town. I actually thought that was a win. I think that was more participation perhaps than in the past, in my opinion anyway. I haven't compared all the surveys, but I thought you guys did a good job of broadening the scope. It's never perfect, but when you make iterative change, it's good. How about you, Jim? What's your sense on that 90% score? It's a good one.
Yeah, I think it's really quite reassuring to see that there's that level of satisfaction. You think about the last couple of years we've all lived through, the pandemic, now inflation, it'd be easy for people to turn to the negative. I think it reflects the fact that there's a shared sense of what's important to the town in terms of livability, protection of the environment. And I think too, people get the sense that our town council and town staff share an understanding of what we're, you know, the kind of community we want to be in the future, and are applying best efforts to try to get us there. So I do get the feeling that there's kind of a shared perspective of why this is such a great place to live and a desire to see it maintained.
Yeah, and some good alignment on some of those priorities. Yeah.
In the survey, I think a couple of things that we're seeing as being really important, not surprisingly, One is affordability in housing, and the other is the whole question of managing growth. So with those two pretty significant challenges facing us, Bill 23 now comes from the province, just to add another degree of complexity. How do you see Bill 23 in terms of its impact, in terms of the town's development planning and infrastructure financing?
So Bill 23, it has a multiple, you know, range of impacts, some of them good and some of them not so good. So I'd say Bill 23, one of the biggest impacts that we're looking at is the, you know, the whole wave of the DCs being the development charges. And, you know, the town has always been a big proponent. I think three or four terms of council ago made it very clear development pays for development, which I think that's the smart thing and smart philosophy. What Bill 23 we see as a bit of a miss to date is there needs to be a better description of what attainable affordable is. So right now they're looking at 80% of the market value, and realistically, that's a $950,000 house in the Blue Mountains. And I think we would all agree that that's not affordable or attainable. So looking at Bill 23, you know, the town has been very active, and we were successful in being able to make a presentation. Councillor Sampson at the time made a presentation to the standing committee on behalf of the town, and just identified some of the areas of our biggest concern. I think one of the key things is just trying to keep a definition, a clear definition that I'm throwing the number around myself of around that $500,000 is something that should be, if you're going to get a wave reduction of development charges, to me, that $500,000 range is something that we should be looking at to be able to get the range of stock here.
Yeah.
So for the Blue Mountains, development's not an issue. We're building like crazy. We're the second fastest growing community in Canada as far as the census. It's just creating a different range of stock for those people who are living or working here, being able to live here. One of the biggest successes of, I think, out of the standing committee and the comments, you know, Bill 23, what was released was originally they were going to remove the ability for third-party appeals. And what was released last week when after the third reading was that those third-party appeals are back in. So people can be a third-party appeal to those. So that was one of our big concerns about people losing that ability. So Bill 23, there's a lot to it. We're really interested in seeing the legislation come out and some of the guidelines coming out. Probably going to see lots of reports coming from staff as updates to council. In regards to what we learn, it's we've talked to a lot of really good people, and it seems like right now the sentiment is it's a little bit early to understand what Bill 23 actually means, but it's happening fast and furious, that's for sure.
Which means you gotta adapt. And so I'm curious, because I think where you're going with trying to assess those definitions and make sure that the benefits of Bill 23 are that it can help provide more housing in a more wide range of housing, it has to have a bit more of a tighter framework around it in that category. Do you see at this stage a mechanism that the town can implement that will ensure that that's the case if Bill 23 is a bit broad right now? Is that clear yet? Or
I would say, Andrew, it's not totally clear. I would say that one of the big concerns that we have is being able to accommodate the growth. And I say that from the frame standpoint of servicing both water and wastewater. So those are ones that that we are actively working on, because there are some nuances to Bill 23 that, you know, they've identified allowance of a third unit. That has a significant impact to our projections for our serviceability. We are very, very active in looking at those numbers. Because at the end of the day, if somebody's coming forward with, you know, a development that adds a range, we want to be able to actively move that process forward and make sure they can move forward as opposed to other allocations being eaten up by some of the developments that we are already seeing in place.
Yeah. And you mentioned working more closely with the county generally, specifically with regard to Bill 23. I know that you've done work with the county trying to prepare responses. What is your sense in terms of how the county could support our efforts to push attainable housing going forward?
I think the big thing there, Jim, is just coming up with a consistent definition. Because quite frankly, I think the definition should be the same, whether or not you're in Southgate, whether or not you're in Chatsworth or Meaford or wherever. I think the definitions are going to be a vital aspect so we can test what people are selling. The other thing that we were very mindful of is we want to make sure that the province is considering the tools that protect that attainability after the first purchase. If the first homeowner can buy a house for, say, $400,000, we have to make sure the tools are in place that that homeowner can't then, you know, a year later sell it for $700,000.
Yeah.
Right. To me, those are the pieces where, I, quite frankly, in the short term, that's why I really think that the rental stock is the answer.
Yeah.
Because you can have some more controls. I know there's the whole, you know, landlord tenant piece, but the rental stock is something that a Town of Blue Mountains doesn't have. And I mean, long-term rentals, we have lots of short-term rentals, but those long-term rentals, I think is a stock that we're hugely deficient in.
Mm-hmm.
And having that protection where that long-term rental stays long-term rental and doesn't just flip into something that is a weekend rental.
Yeah, or becomes a short-term rental or.
And, you know, we're talking about the void to a large extent of long-term rental. It also brings us back to considering Gateway. And just wondered if you could provide an update just in terms of how that process currently stands and what we can expect to see and hear over the next 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, so the Gateway project for the Attainable Housing Corporation, that's probably a question best posed to the Attainable Housing Corporation itself. From a town perspective, we're excited about it. We're excited to see that project move forward because, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking rental stock. And we purchased that piece of property a few years ago now. We really like to see that project get off the ground because we do believe the town is currently working on what we call the 125 Peel Street Community Campus of Care. So between those two projects, we believe that there's a great opportunity for a significant amount of rental stock being brought into the town that doesn't currently exist. I mentioned earlier, 30 years ago, I moved to the town of Blue Mountains, and for the first year, I lived in a trailer because there wasn't the rental stock 30 years ago. I think it's the same thing now. It's probably harder to even find something. And quite frankly, it's going to take those individuals, I think those special individuals or special interest groups, to be able to bring something forward that incentivizes the attainability. Because it's easy to build what we're building today. Making that shift into something different that really provides that long-term sustainability for the attainability.
Yeah, it's not one of those challenges that gets fixed overnight, but the evolution and keeping the work on it is what's important. How do you feel? I know one of the things that we heard through the election campaign was that the official plan review project would help create some more definitions, and as well that the town was considering, or I guess councillors running for election were proposing, that the town could create its own attainable housing strategy alongside that to help, you know, set a bit more clear course on that front. Do you think that those efforts might be sidelined by Bill 23, or do you think they'll be maybe enhanced because of Bill 23?
I think they'd be enhanced.
Yeah.
I think it's critical that, you know, the work get done. It's more important than ever, just to be able to work within Bill 23 and making sure that Bill 23 doesn't influence the character. But I also think, you know, the official plan, it's the most important document that the town can have and really sets the tone of, and I'm going to go as far as to say, the multitude of characters that could exist in the Blue Mountains, because I think we often hear we're communities of communities, and that has to be reflected. But, you know, through this podcast, I guess one of the requests from me as CAO would be citizen engagement. The official plan will never reflect the community if we can't get a good, fulsome range of community engagement. Mm-hmm. And nothing wrong with the existing official plan, because those individuals who wanted to take part, took part. I just think over the years, I've heard lots of people come to council and talk about character. This is the opportunity through the official plan to identify what is the character. And the character in Thornbury may be different, maybe the same as Craigleith. But the character in Ravanna may be different than Thornbury. And we're really trying to focus on that community engagement. So when we do that official plan, it reflects what the community wants. And, you know, there's lots of discussion around height and density.
Yeah.
And, you know, self-admittedly, one of the things that I asked staff to bring forward when we brought the official plan forward was not to actually identify where potential height would be. If I had to do it over again, I would have asked staff to be a little bit more recommending where these locations were. And I can tell you the reason, the approach that I took was, you know, sometimes you put something out there and people think that that's what staff is saying, so that's it. We were taking the approach that we actually wanted to enter into that discussion about, we think height is needed in certain areas, but we don't want to identify where.
Yeah. And you were going to flesh it out in the phase three with all the different zones. Yeah.
I think without us doing it, then a lot of people thought, well, it means everywhere. And from a staff perspective, I can tell you that staff does not believe that height is everywhere. No. We do believe that there may be pockets within the town that would make sense. So we're always learning about how to bring these things forward. I learned a lot through this first phase of the official plan, because at the end of the day, we just really want it to reflect what the community wants.
Yeah, and I think certainly the core question, as I view it, is, you know, intensification versus sprawl, and how do you protect the natural environment while at the same time accommodating that growth? And I think it does then bring us to the question of intensification. What form does it take? You know, where does it happen? So to your point, we're looking forward to sort of the next steps with the official plan review so we can get clarity and I think kind of get everybody on the same page in terms of how we want to try to tackle those issues.
Yeah. And there are places around the world, I mean, we're not that unique actually as a destination type community. There's some great examples globally where they've pulled all of that together and created something that reduces sprawl, increases density, and maintains character and functionality and invests in it. So it's just, you know, it takes time to map that out. But I think you're right, Sean. The starting point is getting the whole community involved. My personal perspective is whenever you see a policy framework that looks a little too simple, it usually tells me that it doesn't have as wide a consultation, because usually when you include everyone's point of view, the end result is a bit broader, right? So that's a tell, but I'm glad you provided a bit of extra context there.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundel, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
I know one of the things in the survey that came forward was a bit of concerns about the labor supply and the economic impact. And I think we all know that the housing is a part of that. And, you know, the current Attainable Housing Corporation is an example. When it was formed, it was an economic development initiative. That's sort of where its genesis was. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, are there other areas outside of housing where you think the municipality can play a role in the labor supply in the region or the labor market?
I think the easy answer for me is just to be the champion of economic development and support it and work with our stakeholders to understand, you know, where we can help, whether it be working with the agricultural area. You know, for a small municipality, for us to have, you know, those two companies, MBTI and Asaba, in regards to mining equipment and looking at their skilled trade requirements and their needs. So I think it's just, you know, Tim Hendry and Alan Gibbons from our economic development team, they're doing some really good reach outs to those groups to figure out what we can do to help. And also, if there's areas that we can't, maybe we can sort of line them up to those different areas that could help and provide that assistance. But to your point, I still think one of the biggest issues goes back to the lack of housing.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to have people live in close proximity. And, you know, we've been very, very lucky to have a good partnership for the Collingwood Transit Link. We see that it works in the Craig Leith area. Craig County's transit system seems to be improving. And, you know, I'm very concerned about, as we move forward with that, that 5-year pilot is going to come around pretty quick. And what's the answer to that continuation?
That's right. Especially when you see the numbers, because I just saw the recent numbers are growing at a good clip, but that means that you got to keep that going.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think the majority of that funding is grant funding. So it's one of those things that, you know, transit, it's a hard thing to take away. You know, I think of Don Braden back in the day, bringing forward that transit idea. And I think we were looking at 750 passengers a month. And those numbers are just blown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that the highest month we saw recently was over 40,000 rides. Yeah.
So yeah, I think for us, you know, transit, accommodation, those are the two things. And then the availability of those skilled trades.
Yeah, I think as we talk about some of the pressures on the town, invariably it comes back to inflation. I mean, if anybody goes to the grocery store these days or fills up their tank, they experience it firsthand. Given the inflation that we're facing, what are some of the approaches that you'd be considering in terms of service levels, how you go about actually staging infrastructure projects, et cetera? But how do you view the best opportunities for trying to deal with the inflation pressures that we've got?
So we're trying to be very creative, and we've been able to recruit some exceptional staff over the last 2-3 years that have sort of came to the town with a different mindset. And, you know, the town typically years past would look at a number of smaller projects and tender them all out separately. And more recently, what we've seen is in our operations team, they've come up with this, you know, and we've seen great success where you take these smaller projects and you tender them into one bigger one. And we've seen great efficiencies with that. Rather than have contracts where equipment was being bought by that contractor, we're actually looking at now buying our own equipment and seeing some significant savings there. So I would say through COVID, and I'll put the town of Blue Mountains up against any municipality, we were very nimble. We never missed a beat. I think coming out of it, and especially with being able to get some fantastic staff coming in, they've been able to bring forward these different business plans that we're seeing real good success out of. The one that comes to mind is the Thornbury West and the Victoria Street reconstruction. That is a product of taking three smaller projects and putting them into one. And I think that's one of our best projects that we've seen. Drake's Path is another one.
You get so many efficiencies that way.
It is. So some new faces at the town, some different backgrounds that we've looked at. And I think those are the successes. It's not the answer to the inflation, because it's something that, you know, everything that we do is seems like it's cost so much more, but even more important to be able to have that process in place so we can be more efficient. We've got projects on the books that probably have pricing, and Thornbury wastewater treatment plants is probably the best example. We're dealing with prices that are probably 15 years old. And right now we're coming back to council. Okay, we need more money. Well, this project was originally on the books 2009, say. And here we are moving forward with a phase one. And yeah, it's expensive, but being able to get those works done much quicker. Our corporate strategic plan in 2019 identified two philosophies that we wanted to work by, and that was plan to execute and then early and often communication. So that plan to execute was taking us out from a plan to plan mode into that plan to execute. And that's something that has served us well over the last few years.
I know part two of this survey was about sort of an asset plan, creating your asset plan, which I think is really critical. You talked about the valuations changing over a 15-year horizon. What is the typical timeline of assessing asset values and repair costs? Do you do it over, is there like a municipal standard there, or?
Yeah, everything has benchmarking from a standpoint of 50 to 75 years sort of thing, right? So I can tell you, and not to go back to Bill 23, but Bill 23 affects our tangible capital asset big time, because now something that we would normally look at growth related being development charge funded. If you don't have those, then it's going to be some other form, most likely taxation, which that taxation would have been picking up sort of those replacement costs before. So our finance department, as a requirement from the government, had met the tangible capital asset reporting and plan, something that we look at all the time. And every budget, it's such a key focus to us. But as the province makes some decisions, it really does affect. And when you heard a lot of the comments around Bill 23, a lot of it came around, but we worked so hard to do our tangible capital asset and it was based on evaluation A. Now we've got to go back and take a look
at it. So something as simple as the three potential suites in one property. You look at a town like ours that is so has a lot of single detached homes. Suddenly that puts three times the drain on pump water or sewer.
Is that existing infrastructure size to be able to handle that additional
unit?
So,
and you mentioned the development charges being reduced, and I don't know if there's absolute certainty or clarity in terms of just how that's going to happen, how, you know, what value development charges may be pulled out of the town of Blue Mountains. But is there still a question to be answered in terms of would there potentially be a provincial source of funding to replace DCs? Is that sort of still on the table rather than having to come out of municipal coffers?
Yeah, there was some correspondence that came out of the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing last week that alluded to there being potential other funding, but it's at a very high level. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, the suggestion that there would be. So again, Bill 23 really early in the process to understand what it means, but that letter coming from the province, I'm not going to say it was reassuring, but it was something that at least they've acknowledged that if you remove the development charge revenue stream, there's going to have to be some other revenue stream to cover that.
Yeah. I guess everyone would want to be reassured that that policy piece is set in stone already. And the fear is that, well, you know, once it's implemented, they don't have to do much. Yeah. But I guess that's the challenge for every municipality in Ontario is to work together to make sure that happens, right? I thought it was interesting. There was a stat in the survey that talked about 50% of Town of Blue Mountains survey respondents on the satisfaction survey sort of said that at that time they felt, this was pre-Bill 23, but they felt that at that time, increasing user fees might be a way to improve municipal finances. 50% actually suggested that. Are there enough municipal services to charge user fees on? Or what's your sense there? Is that viable or how viable is it?
It's viable to a certain point. And that's something that every year through our budget process, we look at our user fees. And there's such a range, you know, whether it be short-term accommodation license fees, whether it be community center user fees. I think
parking charges,
things like that. All of those things. One of the areas that we're going to really focus on is the planning and development fees. Again, to sort of take that approach of, does development pay for development, and do our planners and development engineers and people and staff that deal with development, what is the percentage that they're actually getting covered by the developers? So just recently I did a report to council and got pre-approval, or hopefully getting pre-approval on December the 12th to go forward with a full corporate structure organizational review, which will also include the updated planning and development fees. A good portion of that will be the review of all of our fees. And that is in direct response to what we saw in the survey to package it all together. So it's going to be interesting. It was reassuring to see that 50% and acknowledge that the user fees could be a viable.
Yeah, there's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
I would imagine that it's also challenging because you want to harmonize with your neighboring municipalities too sometimes. So then you don't want unintended consequences or where you're competing in the market. It's a tough time, isn't it, to figure that out?
The other thing that, you know, we've resisted over the a number of years, well, as long as I can remember, you know, some municipalities go down the road of resident, non-resident fees. And it's something that, you know, we really first started getting into with the parking. But like I can tell you other municipalities in Gray County, my daughter played hockey, and for her to play hockey in Owen Sound, there was a resident fee. I think it was about $150 that we had to pay on top of anybody who would have lived in Owen Sound. You know, that $150 went to you don't pay taxes in Owen Sound. So that $150 goes to the town. So
for the, like the arenas and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that was just for hockey.
Yeah.
You know, if she played soccer there, it would be an additional. So it's something that we've resisted. Like I said, we first got into that really more so with the parking, and the parking has been a success. You know, at the end of the day, I think people look at it and it's okay. So if I'm a resident, I get to park for free. And there's been lots of education that we've had to, that parking pass doesn't mean that you can park in a, in front of a fire hydrant. So we've gone through that over the last couple of years. And I think this year, I think all said and done, we're going to be around the $280,000 revenue from parking. So it seems to be working. And I think generally the residents appreciate the fact that, you know, if you've got the parking pass, if you're a resident.
And that's a great, what a great way to raise some revenues to cover costs, keep things clean. And I'm sure there hasn't been that much opposition to it for people who are using it.
Yeah, I would say minimal. One thing it has identified is, you know, it's opened up the discussion around parking. And we desperately need more formalized parking in the rural area. So that's something that we are actively working on. And I think without going through that, the parking exercise, people have been more attuned to, but if you're going to do parking, look at the rural area and some of those naturalized and high traffic trail sections for parking opportunities.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the resident, non-resident perspective on user fees is, you know, it's relevant and important for our community because of the unique nature of how our commercial sector works and the, you know, the huge numbers of tourists who we have coming up, which is good for the local economy, but it also puts strain on the local services and infrastructure. So getting a balance there is, I think, an important opportunity in terms of helping to drive the revenue side.
The bottom line is when you offset those costs from the visitor, and the experience is better as a result, it actually strengthens the economy and the destination. So when you start to charge for those, you become a partner in offering services. It actually benefits the whole destination. But it's, I think, been a really good pilot that they did, like you said, about being nimble. That was deployed during COVID, and it helped to manage traffic and raise revenues as needed. And it was very well executed. Yeah.
In talking service delivery, you know, the one aspect is demand and the kind of capacity. I wonder, the other side of the coin, are you looking at how we deliver services and seeing as we go forward if there are opportunities to do it differently, to do it more efficiently?
Technologies.
Yeah. So part of that report that I brought forward at the last committee of the whole that council will look at again on the 12th was that full corporate structure review and looking at, are we built the way we need to be built as a corporation to deliver the services. But it'll also give council and the community an opportunity to identify what our core services are and what they need to be. And then anything over and above that, you know, whether it's a nice to do, you know, let's finally get to a point where we're making a very clear decision on what are our priorities, what are the services that we're providing, and how are we supposed to be built to be able to provide those. So through COVID, I will say that we took on an absolute ton of work, and I'm realizing now it's not sustainable. And
that's a shared thing, I think, across a lot of organizations. Yeah.
And one thing that shocked me, and I shouldn't have been shocked because I have been here for 30 years, but the municipality has never done a full comprehensive structure review. We've done one department, two department here. But I had a gentleman a few years ago who'd been in the municipal sector for a long time. And it shocked me when he said, you know, the biggest thing about the municipality world and the public sector is we're becoming more and more like private sector. And if you're not reviewing your structure for at least every 3 to 5 years, you're not doing it enough.
Yeah.
And so when I look at, you know, the length of time that we've operated without doing one, it was time. The nice thing is council in the committee of the whole were 100% supportive of it. A number of them said, way overdue. You know, Jim, to your point, I think it will finally give us an opportunity to have that good consultation and figure out what is it we need to be good at and what is it that we're doing that maybe is already being duplicated. And then the other thing is, what can we be doing that maybe the county's already doing? And then take a regional approach.
Yeah.
You know, the South Georgian Bay region, we've heard a lot about over the last 3 or 4 years. And I see it as an opportunity of engaging with our partners in South Georgian Bay. You know, Andrew, you mentioned, you know, the attainable housing strategy. You know, that'll be an opportunity missed if there's not some way that we can't collaboratively do that. Because what realistically, what's the attainability in the Blue Mountains maybe different than what is in Meaford or in Collingwood or Clearview or Wasaga Beach or Great Highlands. So, you know, really looking at that opportunity to figure out where those collaboration approaches could be better done.
You know, I think municipal and county boundaries exist for political, you know,
that's right,
logical political reasons. But, you know, if they start getting in the way of opportunities to be more effective, then they're not working in anybody's interest. And I would say, too, that town residents recognize there's no free lunch, that if you're going to get more of a certain service, there's going to be more costs that go.
Of course.
And I think what we're looking for, as you're suggesting, is a good open discussion about here are the kind of trade-offs that can be made and let people weigh in on what they value and what they don't value.
Yeah. Yeah. The challenge for this council and everyone is going to be the urgency is there. And sometimes it's tempting to try to choose a quick win to demonstrate results as opposed to exploring things in a robust way to get that longer term vision. You know, in your role as CAO, how do you balance that? How do you balance that pressure for the quick win versus the longer term best win?
Yeah, we learned a lot through COVID.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as much as I say that we were overwhelmed and you know, probably took on way too much than we should have, it also, for the first time, gave us the okay to say no. So being able to balance, we're far more strategic now after COVID than I think we ever were. And I think COVID's forced us to do that. COVID's forced us to do a lot. Like even 3 years ago, if you were to tell me that we would ever be in a position where 80 or 90% of our staff were working remotely, I would have thought, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing how fluid that we were able to do that. And something that, again, through this study that we're going to do, looking at the models, because we know that there's models for 4-day work weeks. We know that there's models for working remotely. So being able to be more creative and more innovative, I think will allow me in my role over the next 4 or 5 years to be able to be more strategic and less reactive.
And that will help take pressure off the availability of office space as well, which I know is an issue more broadly in the town.
Yeah.
Certainly at town hall as well.
That's right. Yeah. There's some good cost savings to be had for sure. I'm going to dive a little deep into the weeds on the survey, specifically related to the Craigleith area. There's a lot of, you know, growth and development. And, you know, as you said, a lot of these plans have been on the books for a long time. And there's some, we've kind of termed them as gaps in the area, whether that's trails, sidewalks, safe crossings, green space. It was interesting. You had a stat in the survey that showed in the Craigleith area, 75% of people were satisfied with the parks, both unprogrammed and programmed. And actually, that was the one thing I read and thought, that's not what I hear. But I'm just wondering, I've heard council acknowledge that there's a need to focus on Craigleith from some of that infrastructure perspective, Craigleith Village. I'm wondering, you know, what's your sense of what that looks like right now and how much of a priority it'll be in the next year or two?
Yeah, so in preparation of this podcast, I had a good chance to meet with our Director of Community Services, Ryan Gibbons, just to confirm that, you know, we're still on track with some of the plans that, again, 10, 15 years ago were planned. So, you know, through development, that's where we've been able to acquire a lot of our parkland.
Yeah.
And however, as development, you know, it takes a while to take place, so does the assumption and receipt of those lands. And we see that there's a really good opportunity to work with developers to see if we can actually get pre-assumption of those lands. I'm a big proponent that I think people really would like have the park or the green space or the trails established before the houses are built. So again, you can be strategic. Do you want to live beside that park or that trail? And with the parks and trails that we have on the books, I think we are actually positioned well for a good amount of acreage and of open space. The key thing that we haven't done well over the years is being able to proactively say what's actually going to be there. And there's that fine line of being too presumptuous of figuring out what the demographic is going to be. But, you know, the ability for us to put some good infrastructure in the ground early in a development, but yet still be flexible enough to make it work and reflective of what the public needs. I think of Windfall, that's a really interesting development that, you know, there is a regional park component to that. You know, I think of the lands off of Joza Wider that have been there for years and years and years. working with the community to figure out what do those pieces of property need to be. Craig Leith over the years, and I think it's just the demographic has changed. Those lands maybe not have weren't used 15, 20 years ago because maybe it was more of a weekend sort of people coming and enjoying their time and really not requiring a lot of the municipal facilities
day to day.
We acknowledge the demographic has changed so much. And, you know, even to a point where we're acknowledging now, and we did with the previous council, winter snow removal on sidewalks. That's something that we're going to have to get into. I just think years ago, it wasn't a big focus because when people were here, they might not have been here for a long duration and they maybe just, I don't need the sidewalks done.
Yeah.
So we brought a report to council in the last term saying that here's the plans for Craig Leith for sidewalk snow removal. And we got to get there. It's what the community needs.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because some of those investments, they do impact other things and I think lead to efficiencies. So when the municipality started snow plowing a few of the sidewalks in this Craig Leith area, what we observed was more people walking, not taking their cars. They have safe passage. So you're not dealing with traffic congestion. There's the environmental footprint. You have the safety issues. And there's ways where some of those investments can have like a triple bottom line or more than a single bottom line. Yeah. It's just how do you plan for it?
And I think, too, it speaks to the importance of the town recognizing the changing composition of the Craig Leith community. With more full-time residents, you're right, it really does change their requirements and expectations. So it's encouraging to hear the town sort of act on the recognition of that.
Yeah, yeah, you're tapped into it. You're aware.
Well, I think the other thing too that, you know, years ago, and not to get too technical, but with developments, we always looked at an assumption. So where it goes from the developer to the responsibility of the town, lots of those development agreements were based on a 75% build-out. And, you know, the developer may be sitting and being responsible for those roads and sidewalks for, well, we've had some in the town of Blue Mountains that are 15, 16 years, where this shift of, and I'm a big proponent of this, to doing a two-year assumption, where the town should want to assume this. It needs to be in good shape.
Yeah.
But for the resident, it's good for the resident to, within 2 years, be able to have their snow plowed by a municipal plow or sidewalks done. And quite frankly, it's a lot easier for us to budget knowing that, okay,
it's coming sooner. Now, yeah.
We're going to be assuming, you know, 3 kilometers of sidewalks.
And I would imagine to your point, development pays for development. If you have that shorter time window, then you can better price those services and then make sure you get the money for it too.
Yeah. Exactly.
Coming back to Bill 23 briefly, we're talking about working with developers, what will, you know, you'll be looking for from developers. Is it too early to get a sense for how Bill 23 may change your approach and working relationships with developers?
I think it's going to have to, just because there will be that sense of expedited process. And from a town perspective, expedited process can't jeopardize the communication. I think an expedited process actually may help communication because it'll be more fluid, more consistent, as opposed to a developer moving forward, they communicate and then they go quiet for 3 or 4 years and then fires back up. Expedited process, I think, will be more like early and often communication. Mm. So people are always in the know. I can think of a handful of developments that, you know, rightfully so, residents, when did we know that this was going to happen? And you look back and say, well, yeah, that public meeting was 5 years ago, right? Well, they didn't live here 5 years ago.
That's right. So might as well have never happened, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So even though people may be a little bit concerned about, well, you don't want it to go too fast. There's that fine line, but you want it to be continuous. So that way they're successful and you actually are disturbed less. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, I think of the Thornbury area. One thing that we're going to be focusing on trying to help people understand is what does an infill project look like? Because we've got a number of infill projects within our Thornbury settlement area, which is the primary settlement area in Thornbury, that realistically, you're supposed to fill those ones before you move into your secondary. And typically, it's the infill projects that are very concerning because they'll be, you know, technically green space behind or around somebody that all of a sudden there's movement on the development. And so, well, that's an infill. It's developable land. Making sure people are aware. We really rely heavily on our interpretive mapping. And one thing that we're working on is identifying very clearly on a public accessible interactive map, these are all the infill projects that would be available.
Oh, that's interesting. Right? So you can go somewhere and see where there's potential for infill.
Exactly. Because infill, people don't expect it. And then all of a sudden you get survey crews around and, you know, a report comes to council and wait a minute.
Yeah. But when you're in a compressed community like that and you see that stuff, it's just everyone starts to ask the questions. And if you don't have the answers, it's the speed of development means the requirements for communication are that much more important. I have a final question for both of you, not planning related, more experiential. The town, as you both mentioned, has great assets, great livability, and we have great experiences here. Of the town's trails, facilities, experiences, what is the one or two that you think are hidden gems that people don't often think of, but they should, and they should go visit? Well, I'll start with you, Jim.
Probably my answer reflects some of the activities we love to get involved with, in particular hiking. There are so many options and great places to go for hiking. I've been here 6 years, haven't done enough research myself to really, you know, find all those hidden gems. Interestingly, when our daughter comes up to visit, she's always pushing us to try, you know, some new options. So we get out and we do explore some different areas, but there's just so much available in that regard that being able to get out and enjoy the outdoors is obviously one of the big draws for this region. So I would say, you know, exploring and discovering more hidden gem hiking trails is probably what I would focus on.
How about you, Sean?
Mine is a little bit more overarching. I think it's the community. It's who we are. It's the people that we have here. I'm hugely, you know, happy and excited to see a whole new sense of diversity within our community. I think it's something that, you know, I think it's making us far better. But really, I do like the trails and, you know, our open space. Those, I think, are things that have allowed our community to be just made up good people. You know, when I moved here 30 years ago, it always struck me just how good the people were. And as we've grown, I think when people come here and see the people and see sort of the community that we are, I think it draws them. And I think it takes a while to get used to it. But at the end of the day, I think that's the thing I love about our community. It really is about the people and the generations before that have sort of set those roots into the ground.
Yeah.
I think some of the big businesses that we have in our community, and you still go to them and, you know, they're generational deep.
Yeah. And there's great stories and history. And, you know, I can think of a way to blend both of your recommendations together. And I've lived this experience myself. Often when I'm on the trails, I find that people who live in this community who use them are very, to your point, Sean, very open to have a chit chat. So it's rare that I do a trail that I don't run into someone and we don't end up sitting and talking, oh, where do you live? Where are you from? What's your favorite trail? And I think you're right. Talking to people from the community, it's a great group. People love to talk and share. So two really good examples and they kind of work together. Thanks for this time, both of you. I really appreciate the ability to sit down and especially Sean to get a sense from you in your role at this critical time in the community, you know, navigating new counselors, keeping the projects moving forward. I think you do an exceptional job and you're always willing to listen and share your ideas. So I thank you for that. And Jim as well. It's always great to get your perspective on, you know, the policy challenges, but also how do we make sure we're keeping things as efficient and affordable and ratepayer focused as we can. So I really enjoy working with both of you and thanks for sharing your time with our listeners and look forward to regrouping again and seeing how we're doing.
Awesome. Thanks very much for the invite.
Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to Blue Mountain Village Voices, a production of the Blue Mountain Village Association. For more, go to bluemountainvillage.ca.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com.
And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.